Okay, so let's get started. Apparently there's been a security failure. Y'all made it here.
You made it here.
So I'm here to talk about how I stopped using shared variables and learned to love object orientation. And we're going to have a little actual code that you can take home and use. So hopefully you'll find that entertaining. For those of you, does anybody here not know this? Okay, we'll move on. I gave this, the first time I gave this talk was down in Sydney back in March, and I was walking in the streets of Sydney, and I came across this van parked out. Actually, there were two of them right in a row. And I'm thinking this is my new commercial venture. I'm really liking the idea. It has absolutely nothing to do with shared variables or object orientation, but the idea of being a beer doctor and commercial refrigeration and beer plumbing. I mean, talk about a specialty. How much better can life get, right?
Yeah, beer plumbing in Australia is really good too.
It's also very important. It's a critical part of life down there. So it's a great
part of the infrastructure.
It's a great place.
Anyhow.
So I need a little bit of information from you guys. So anybody here working with a legacy application? Really? I'm shocked. Is anybody working with anything older than version 8? Currently older than version
8. First deployment?
Let's go to first deployment. First deployment version 3. All right, I know some of you are liars, but you probably don't know it. Something from the V6 era?
First deployment.
Yeah, okay. Anybody who's working on something that was created V10 and above? Okay, so there's a few people that are a little bit more modern. All right. Shared variables. Got shared variables in your environment?
Yeah, betcha.
Anybody with no shared variables? Ooh. Why are you here? Okay, so if there are shared variables in your environment, was it your idea? Or did somebody else do this to you? How many of you was it my fault? Yeah. I thought so. Anybody currently heavily in object orientation? Okay, you can all leave. Okay. So shared variables, what are they? If you're not terribly familiar, they're basically a very widely used worst practice from the old legacy days. They're something that we had to use 20 some odd years ago because we had very few options. We didn't have parameter passing. We had limits on program sizes. So we could neither create really large programs nor could we pass parameters between them. So we ended up using shared variables to communicate information back and forth. Talking about V3, V4 in those days. So if the guy who created your legacy application and inflicted this on you did it that long ago, then well, it's maybe sort of excusable. There's two kinds of shared variables. There's just a plain old shared variable, and there's a global shared variable. The difference between them, well, you can use them in a program that wants to reference the values by just calling it shared. Every time you do a new of a shared variable, you get a new copy of it. There's a new instance, so there's a stack of them that builds up. If it's global, there's only ever one copy of it, which is kind of handy because that way you don't lose track of it. So if your code is doing stuff like this, well, that gets pretty confusing in a hurry. If it's doing new globals, then it's a little bit simpler to deal with. And so if you do a redundant new global, so if you're always creating this thing as a new global, that doesn't hurt anything. It doesn't create a new copy. It doesn't overwrite the old one. Whatever is still there remains there. And when your session or when your startup program ends, you drop back to the editor, it's still there. So it keeps going for the life of the session, which is handy. So the good thing about shared variables is that the syntax, from the 4GL perspective anyway, is very compact. It's very simple. You just define the thing, and you don't have to do any more work to have it created or instantiated. It allows you to share data between procedures. We didn't get perimeter passing until version 6 in 1989. Anybody here wasn't born in 1989? For real?
Well, 5 days of 1989.
Awesome. Okay. No, that's great. Now, this, by the way, proves that there are younger people in the progress environment. Great. We love you. I was making your life miserable back then, by the way. It gets you around the 63K R code limit. Anybody ever have to deal with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Anybody still have to deal with it? Thank you, 4GL team. But that remained a problem until version 9. That really didn't go away for people until we get into the V9 era. And the other thing that it does in some of the sort of intermediate code is it gets rid of the need to have long lists of mostly unused parameters when you call like a library routine or something like that. If you use a shared variable, you got this global state floating around. So in some ways, that might be seen as better by some people. Of course, now you can pass temp tables and XML and JSON and all that cool stuff, too. So that's the good. But most of that stuff was only good in the past. So really, the only thing that's left to be good about shared variables is, well, the syntax is really compact and simple. That's the only good thing left. Julian, you look shocked. You didn't think there was anything good left, did you?
No.
All right, so as you might be able to tell, we're on a theme here. We've got the good, then there's the bad. So with shared variables, you can run into a couple of unfortunate error messages from time to time. You can have a conflict in extent data type or undo status for global variable. Anybody ever see that? No, Gus, you've never seen that error?
Nope.
Your code never has bugs, does it?
Often.
Just not that one. Or you can get this problem where a variable has not yet been created. So if you're running code that uses shared variables, here's a couple of things you might run into. That's bad. So what that led to in the past was defining shared variables in include files. So you have a lot of include files that go around declaring shared variables for you. But include files, as we now all know, are a worst practice, and we'll have a whole separate talk on that next year.
Not all.
Are you volunteering to give that talk?
No. Include files, best practice in context of OO.
Okay.
Somebody would be able to give me better
alternatives. Okay. Well, maybe what we could do is a panel session with you and Julian. So you have a...
Sometimes it's the right tool.
Sometimes. Most of those times were in 1980-something, but okay. So we have the good, we have the bad, and we have the ugly. So some of the real ugliness with shared variables is that it's creating an undocumented interface within your code. So you have this usage and this binding that's going on between programs that is really largely undocumented. You're tightly coupling things. So modules are depending upon knowledge about each other that is somewhat secret and difficult to uncover. It makes a lot of the debugging and analysis kinds of things that you need to do much more difficult. You don't have any control over input and output like you do with parameters. So you can't define a shared variable as being read-only in all of your sub-procedures and only be able to set it in one. You have a lot of undesired global side effects because of the global scope. So a program, and some of you who work with some of my code might not know this, but there are some shared variables that can be accidentally set under certain circumstances and have unfortunate side effects. Unit testing is really challenging if you have an environment with a lot of shared variables because of the side effects and the things that you don't know that are going on. How do you test whether or not a shared variable has been correctly assigned and is doing what it's supposed to be doing? And you get a lot of ridicule from your peers. Now, some of us are okay with that ridicule, others not so okay. So that's the ugly. Here's a typical use of a shared variable in a legacy program. So you're going to have inc/common.i or whatever. You're going to throw new global into the into the argument there. Stuff's going to happen, and you're going to go find customer no lock where customer equals CNUM. And if you're looking at this program, where the heck did where did CNUM get defined? You don't see it in the code. It's undocumented. It's nowhere to be seen. There's no parameters, none of that. So it's kind of a mystery to the guy who comes along to look at this code. Where did that come from? Oops, I don't have to do that, do I? So, like I just said, no parameters. Lots of things inside this include file that probably aren't being used. You got a hidden coupling to other programs going on here. Bad stuff. Basically, you end up with code that is a maze of twisty little passages, all different, or all like, depending on your background. And got to remember my joke here. So as you may remember, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was a spaghetti western.
I'm assuming you secured rights to using of the images.
Yeah. Yeah, I signed all the paperwork.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that was kind of our life up until version 10 came out, and the object-oriented 4GL became something that we could all learn to love and embrace. Now, I haven't always been a fan of object orientation. In fact, I might have been a skeptic for a while. But there are some myths, some of which I may have subscribed to once or twice, about object orientation. And so I'll try to debunk some of those, at least from my perspective. So one myth that you might hear is that you have to rewrite everything into pure OO in order to use the object-oriented 4GL. You might have heard that using OO is the grand ultimate solution that will solve all of your problems. Okay, there's a few people who think that still. OO makes your application more flexible, or more productive, or more understandable. You guys. And with OO, modeling the real world is easier. Yeah, sure, right. So basically, if you take a text editor and do a little search and replace on OO and replace it with anything that's been popular in programming for the last 30, 40, 50 years, it all reads the same. Yeah, this great new thing is going to make your life so much better, more flexible, more realistic. Yeah, right.
COBOL.
See, no, right.
Fortran.
Go all the way back to COBOL and Fortran. It's been the same story for our entire lives. So, yeah, okay, the marketing people can recycle slides. Great.
ESPs.
None of those technologies delivered on the, you know, the life-changing events kinds of stuff, and OO is not going to either. Technology is a tool. The quality of the results depend entirely on the person using the tool, which isn't to say OO is useless. So there are also some open edge OO myths. So those were kind of generic myths that you get from the world in general. But there's a lot of bad information about progress in object orientation as well. You know, you might hear that progress doesn't support true OO. Well, anytime you see true in an argument, you know you're in a religious argument, you should just walk away. You might have heard that OO, progress OO in particular, is only for people who are doing GUI programming. Anybody ever hear that or think that? Get that feeling? Yeah. It's not true. It works just as well for procedural code as it does for GUI code. Character code is perfectly happy to be OO. Batch code is perfectly happy to be OO. You might have heard that procedural and OO don't mix. Also not true. Progress is all done adding OO features. Then, you know, they finish that feature, they've moved on to the next big thing. That's not true either. Objects and relational databases don't mix. That's something you might hear too. Also untrue. So one of the big things is that people say, you know, they basically throw up their hands in despair and say, well, my application was written back when version 4 was new and exciting, and so OO just doesn't apply to me. Anybody feel that way? That should be why you're all in the room. So here's some facts. Important fact, progress started rolling out the object-oriented 4GL in 10.1a. Advancement has been very rapid. New features have been added continuously since then. and it's still happening. We had a session here this week about what's new with OpenEdge and Release 11. There's a whole bunch of object-oriented stuff in that discussion. There's a whole bunch of OO stuff on the roadmap. OO is very live. It's moving forward. A lot of great stuff is happening in the 4GL related to object orientation. It works very well with all of the environments that you might want to deploy it in. It works great for GUI code. It works great for character code. It works great for web code and batch. And you can mix it into procedural code just fine. It's not a problem. They mix, they match, everything is cool. So you don't have to think that you can't use it when you go home. You can use it right away. And I'm here to talk about your V4 app. Because if you got a V4 app, you probably have a lot of non-OO code. So how do you use it? If you don't know how to write some object-oriented code, we're going to have a little lesson here. Create a program, call it var.cls. It's a class. So CLS is the extension for a class file. You put it in a directory called foo. You compile foo/var.class and save the results in foo/var. Looks like this. Very simple little class here. That what does this do? So we have a public property called drink. It's character. It's no undo. It's got a getter and a setter, which if you're not OO, you don't know what any of that means. But that's okay. By the time you leave, you will. We have a method called order a drink.
So is the drink keyword new for all?
Sorry?
Is the drink keyword after message new for all?
Message, that quote should have gone here. No, wait a minute. No, that's right.
Yeah.
Don't you worry, that's gonna work. That'll be good. So then we write a procedure. So we get some procedural code here to order a drink. So we're gonna use foo. So we're saying we wanna use everything that's part of the foo namespace or whatever that is. And we're going to define a variable called myBar as a bar. So we have that bar class. We're creating our own bar. It's a new bar. And our bar drink is going to be beer and order drink. So I'm ordering beer here. Anybody? These are pretty good. You can get them next door. So some of the differences between shared variables and objects. Shared variable consistency is checked at runtime. Your shared variable definitions have to match everywhere, which encourages the whole include file thing. Objects are different in that they're checked at compile time. So the type checking occurs at compile time, not at runtime. So when you try to compile something, if you've done it wrong, you're going to know right then and there. You're not going to deploy it to a customer and then find out you've made a mistake. You have encapsulation because you're not using include files, except for some heretics. But you're not using include files to create the objects. You might use them within. You have a single implementation, so there's only one place you have to go when you want to change something about the object. You don't have to go to multiple places to do that. And you can control the privacy, the protection, and the security aspects of the object. So you don't have unplanned side effects and things like that going on that are hassling you all the time. So what's that got to do with shared variables? How do they come together? How do you bring a shared variable and an object together in a meaningful way and learn to think that OO is a good thing? Well, that's where this thing called the singleton comes into play. It's an object that there's just one copy of. Progress lets you create these if you use only static properties and methods in the class. In other words, there are no database references. And no, I believe you can't have temp table references either. But basically, it's something that is self-contained. It doesn't have any data that is outside the object. There are people who will tell you, some of them are probably in this room. Yes, Mike?
You could have both in there, but you shouldn't.
Well, you can't have a static reference and have it still be a singleton. I don't think that will compile, but we can talk about that later. Some people will tell you that singletons are an anti-pattern, that they're a bad thing because they introduce global state to your application, which is true. They do bring global state to your application, But we're not introducing it in this case. It's already there. We've got shared variables that are already floating around in this application. What we want to do is get control of them. So if it is an anti-pattern, we didn't bring it to the table. It's debatable whether or not it is, but at least it's debatable with me. So what can you do about that? You can reference a static class without explicitly instantiating it. This is the cool part. So if you have one of these classes, you can reference it without ever instantiating it. What does that mean? It means that you don't have to have using and you don't have to have new. So in your code, you don't have to do anything special to introduce this. You don't have to go and edit all your code to start using a class that has been declared somewhere else. So basically, all you're going to do is you're going to replace the shared variable references with something as simple as a global search and replace. So if you can go and you can make the global search and replace in your code, you can get rid of all the shared variables just by referencing that class. Very, very simple. And now we'll go through how you do that. So remember, here's our old legacy.p program. This is what it looked like originally. We create a class called global shared variables. I'm keeping this real simple using short names. That looks something like this. Foo.gsv. The cnum is our shared variable. It's the same as the shared variable that we have in the other program. And it has get and set. And what this does is it just allows it to behave just like a regular variable. If you want to assign a variable value to it, you just say cnum equals. If you want to read that value, you say something equals cnum. And these are very trivial methods. They do nothing. They just let you assign those values in and out. And then you end the class. You're done, as far as creating the class goes. If this compiles, it's done. That's all the work you had to do to create it. If you want to use it, you come back in here and you replace that variable called cnum, which had no definition except buried in here, with this reference to the class. We didn't have to new it. We didn't have to say using. We didn't have to do anything. All we had to do is global search and replace on cnum with the class name. We're done. We don't even have to go into here. Whoops. We don't even have to go in here and remove the declaration of cnum. We can leave it there if we want to. So, bang, we just got rid of a global shared variable and created and turned it into a class. So, that doesn't address any of the issues with unwanted side effects that you might have from a late night of drinking, or many continuous late nights of drinking, or failing to have protected members of your class, properties that are world writable that you want to control a little bit or something like that. So how do you handle that? What is an unintended side effect even? Well, here's an example of where we might be updating something. So we have our old shared variable here and we assign a value to it and then more stuff happens. How about if we want to prevent that? How about if we want to prevent people being able to assign a value to that? Well, here's one way you can do it. You could just comment out the setter. So now nobody can assign a value to that number. But there's at least one person who needs to assign a value. But anyway, go back here. So you do this. We have commented out the setter. And when you compile, at compile time, not at runtime, you're going to get an error here because that's a read-only property. So you get this error at compile time, not at runtime. So you know before you deploy it to customers that somebody tried to do something that wasn't allowed. That's one of the big advantages of using a class instead of using a shared variable. Now you've prevented a side effect from occurring without having to get the bug report and go through that. Remember from the general session how it's 1,000 times more expensive to have a bug in production than it is to have it at development. So you've saved a whole bunch of money here. But a better way to do it than just commenting it out is to make it private and create a method to allow it to be done in an appropriate manner. So we make the method private, we create a set cnum method down here where we assign a value from an integer. So this way, ordinary procedures, like the one that we just ran, still can't update the value, but people who are part of the right class hierarchy can. So let's go through that. So now we have a new method out here for actually setting it in those cases where we explicitly want to do it. So now you have to write a little bit of code in those places where you really do want to set the variable, as opposed to accidentally setting it in places where you don't want to do it. Pretty cool. Why?
All you did was change the equal sign into parentheses.
Yeah.
You haven't accomplished anything.
Well, I got rid of the accidental side effect. Now somebody has to actually explicitly mean to do that.
Why is the other one accidental?
I don't know. Because they're just conveniently using a variable. Now, okay. Yes, Tim?
Well, one of the things this gets you away from is the possibility of somebody saying, hey, I got a value in this program, I want to get it to this program, and that variable isn't being used. Well, I'll just stick it in there for the call, go down here and access it, come back up here and continue on going. This stops that from happening.
Yes.
By accident. You have to intentionally do it.
Thank you, and that is the use case I was thinking of, because the variable in question was called pick, and it's accidentally used frequently in a certain code base that I'm familiar with. So, anyway, now that you have objects, what else can you do with them? Well, one of the cool things you can do is you can use them to cache database fields, or you can extend the 4GL. So this is the bonus part of the presentation. We're taking care of the shared variables now. So here's some code that lets you cache frequently used database fields. It's a little bit of an eye chart, so I'm sorry about that. This basically is a singleton. It has no static database references anywhere in it. That lets you go out there and take one of these frequently used control table fields or something like that and cache it in a variable. And then it will periodically go out and refresh it from the database, but you can control the time frame there. So instead of every time you want to see whether the customer is still based in the United States, having to go out there and do a find customer master, what country am I in? You can just do this, and maybe you can update the cache once an hour, once a day, once every 10 minutes, whatever, but that'll be much better than the million times per second that some applications update these fields. So how does that work? Hey, test-driven development. We got a test. Look at that. Cool. So it's important to remember to start these things with reread no lock, or you're going to have unfortunate side effects. We have a little variable here. We go out and we find our system configuration thing where the value equals test. We got a loop. If we're all done, then we're done. Blah, blah, blah. So you take that code on the previous page, run this, and you'll see how it works. Basically, it only updates every now and again. And you can go in the background and change the variable and see what happens. Extending the 4GL. So you might have this imaginary 4GL class that I is for imaginary, not integer. And you might want to do something like support the PutEnv environment. So Progress supports getEnv. You can get an environment variable from the operating system, but you can't put one. So it's kind of a deficiency in the 4GL that you might want to address. So we're going to call the external library called the libc-so6, and we're going to put an environment variable out there. Now, in the good old days, you had to do this with a persistent procedure and an external call, and everywhere you wanted to do it, you probably would either copy and paste the code, or you'd use an include file or something like that. Here, we can just create this class, and we've extended the 4GL. We're using a singleton, so we don't even have to declare it in the programs that are going to use it. It's like it's part of the language. So this is all the code that it takes to do that. Bingo, you've extended the 4GL. Now, anywhere in your application, all you have to do is reference it like so. So I4GL, always put in the boog, doop, doop. And boom, there you'll get your answer. Piece of cake.
So why is that better to run put env?
Because to do the run put env, you would have had to have the declarations in whatever procedure you were doing that, and you'd be sprinkling it all over the place. Yes, Mike?
Compile time validation of parameters.
Yes, and you have compile time validation of the parameters and the syntax and all that good stuff.
And no accidental data conversions.
And no accidental data conversions. Thanks, guys. I'm glad you're here. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, the define return parameter.
Yeah.
How would that differ from, say, doing a function and having the function? You know, how would that differ?
Okay, so this is the. Have you done work with external shared objects or DLLs? This is how. So when you're working with an operating system library. You have to call an external procedure, and this is how you get a value back from it. It's just the syntax that you do that. It's special to that usage. It's not normal syntax for normal progress code.
It's not OO code.
Yeah, this is basically a call to some non-object code.
Okay, but the use it, the way you would use it, would that be like a function?
Well, the way you use the 4GL here.
The way you're using that class, and it has the define return parameter that's going to return some value, how would that differ from a function?
Okay, so when you use the class, what you will use is the method right here, osputenv. This method then runs the putenv function that's been defined up here. So in your code, you're not going to use this. The class uses it indirectly.
The top four lines there, that's not part of the class. That's a declaration of the operating system function that sets the environment variable.
Okay. So it isn't.
Right, so
on the returning a value.
No, what that's saying is that's the definition of that function as provided by Linux.
Okay.
This is like a forward define of a function.
But you cannot define external procedures in a function.
Yes, oh, not in a function, correct.
You need to have them outside.
Right.
So in your code that takes advantage of this library, what you're doing is this piece right here. This is what you would call. You wouldn't call any of that other stuff. And then you'll get this result down here. So, some caveats and warnings. Like I mentioned earlier, you can't have any database references in that code, or at least not any static ones. And if you need to use data, you're going to have to write that. Mike?
That is simply not true. You just have to define a static buffer for that.
Define a static buffer.
Because the standard buffers are instance based.
Okay, so I gotta go back and test that.
Customer for customer, and you can do that.
Ah, really?
Just read the syntax.
Okay. Well, I gotta revisit that. Thank you. I learned something in my own presentation. Isn't that great?
Will you revisit that before you post this to the site? Will you revisit before?
Maybe.
but it's his history, so.
That would make it a lot easier. Boy, I hope that's true. So the naming and pathing of objects can get a little bit difficult to get used to at first. You know, you have to understand how objects are named and how to use them in the compile statements to get that all to work correctly. And I still don't understand it very well because I don't do it often enough. But I'm sure that there are guys back here who will be happy to go on endlessly about it.
The other thing is just a path, and you do the dots instead of the slashes.
Just, if you get confused, just post something to Peg or communities, and Mike and Julian and Tim will all jump in, and they'll give you more advice than you ever wanted.
Thomas.
Absolutely, that's right. Well, he's been quiet. He's hiding back there. uncharacteristically so. So, you know, that does take a little getting used to. Static classes can't be unloaded from memory. This is a lot of people think this is a big downside. So once you reference it, that's it. It's in memory. You can't get rid of it. So you got to shut down your session and then restart.
Which is one of the good reasons not to have database buffers in there. Yeah.
Thank you. I knew there was a good reason. and if you're okay, and this is a little bit of a gut juice. So if your shared variables are just plain old shared rather than global shared, this whole thing won't really actually work unless they're shared accidentally. You know, they're shared, but they're really used as if they're global. Then you can go ahead and replace them anyway. But you might have some testing issues with that because sometimes people don't do what they're supposed to. But for global shared, it works really well. So cool. You don't have to have define, you don't have to have using, you save all this stuff. There's no forward definitions of any of this. It's all just there. Simple reference, you get the strong compile time typing, you have improved encapsulation, you've abstracted your implementation, you're on the sunny path to glorious programming, and you can join all your peers in the back of the room in the modern age. Isn't that good? So, now we'll take questions. Yes, sir.
I mean, I'm assuming that you can still use using if you wanted to just, you know, get rid of the long object path and you want to, you know, get down to it.
Yeah, sure, you could. You could. But you don't have to.
But you don't have to, like the other.
Yeah. Yes.
I have a comment. You can have a shared variable referencing a class instance. So if you need something to be passed from one procedure to the other, mm-hmm. rather than using Tom's approach of a static class, which is the equivalent of a global shared thing, could be passing an object with five properties from one procedure to the other using a shared variable instead of the currently five variables which are needed to file. It's less of a change than changing to parameters or whatever. You get some of the benefits of using a class.
Yeah, although changing to parameters isn't necessarily a hard thing to do either.
Right. So,
and it's very much cleaner than.
And in both cases, you're going to be modifying both pieces of code, right?
Right. So you have to do a parameter.
Yeah.
So part of what I found really attractive about this when I started messing around with it was that I didn't have to touch very much code. It really minimized the impact of the code that I had to go in and mess around with, and that was a big part of the appeal because every time you touch something, you got a lot of potential for introducing a bug, and I hate bugs. Because people call me. I really just want to be quiet in my office without any of that going on. Any other questions? Comments? Personal problems? Julian?
I'm married to an Irish lady.
Not for long.
Many and varied.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'll give you a little bit of your day back, and we can all head out.